WNYC Studios is supported by Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, where hundreds of researchers make new discoveries inspired by the work of previous Dana-Farber scientists. Learn more about their momentum at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Given the large number of cases, we are anticipating that in the coming days, there will be people who have severe illness from flu, particularly people who have underlying health problems.
That was Jessica Scaparotti from the New York City Health Department. But what does that anticipation of more cases that she talks about mean we should do? Looks like the on-again, off-again warnings about the H1N1 flu are on again in New York City, and with them some new politics of containing the flu. Is the city giving us enough information? We'll hear shortly from a city councilman who says no. Is it closing schools quickly enough? The wife of the assistant principal who died thinks not. Later this hour, as you just heard on the news, the mayor and the school's chancellor and I think the health commissioner will hold a news conference with the latest on the outbreak, and we will bring you part of that later in the hour. But right now, let's try to make sense of the swine flu resurgence in New York. This is still one death when about 1,000 die in New York from other strains of flu each year. Still, there are new recommendations as to what people should do to protect themselves. So there is new science here. There is new public health here. And there are some new politics here. We'll talk to three guests, beginning with Dr. Mark Siegel, who is a professor at the NYU Langone Medical Center. He was quoted in a Daily News article about this today. Dr. Siegel, thanks for coming on WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me on.
And I was surprised to see your quote, because you seem to wonder whether the assistant principal, Mitchell Wiener, actually died of swine flu or perhaps of something else. What were you thinking?
Well, I want to clarify this, Brian. First of all, I obviously don't know the details of his case, and I'm not treating him, but I want to say that in most of the cases, we suspect that flu isn't the actual cause of death. It's usually an underlying problem, and let me explain that better. Let's look at flu as a stress to the system. It makes you greatly fatigued. It causes a high fever. It knocks down your immune system. Unless you're in perfect health, you might be harboring another condition that could then lead to your death. Now, I don't know, you know, the medical details aren't confirmed, but there were some reports of a lung infection, for example. Pneumonia is a very common cause of death in people with a flu. In fact, even looking back at the 1918 Spanish flu, more than 50% of the death certificates actually were written pneumonia. We don't know whether that means bacterial pneumonia, but at least several of our flu experts and flu researchers do believe that that's probably the case.
But are you saying in the case of Assistant Principal Wiener, this could be a coincidence, or are you saying that the flu may have exacerbated some underlying respiratory condition?
Well, it may have come at the same time. Again, I don't know the medical details, but I'll go out on a limb and say that it's pretty likely that the infection that actually caused his death may not have been the flu itself, which is not to minimize the effect that the flu played here. But I'm also pointing out, Brian, that people can die of heart attacks, people can die of kidney failure. There's a lot of things that go on if you have a severe case of the flu. We have to, of course, remind our listeners that so far this particular strain of the flu has been actually quite mild.
Right. But I want to talk about this phrase that we keep hearing and try to demystify it for people to some degree, and that is underlying conditions. So Assistant Principal Wiener, he was 55. He was reported to have some kind of underlying conditions, although there's some confusion about this. Even in his case, I read diabetes. I don't know if that's true. His family seems to say, no, he had no underlying conditions. The only thing he had was gout. Maybe gout is secondary to diabetes as a common situation. Do you know in his case, and what do we mean really by underlying conditions that might be relevant to the flu?
Well, I want to separate two very, very important points you made. You know, one is that somebody that may actually be hit with the flu can actually get sick enough so that other things can come into play, like pneumonia, like sinus infections, like ear infections. But then there's also the question that you're now addressing, which is, could he have underlying medical conditions that weakened his immune system to begin with and made him more likely to get sick from the flu? That's the gray area here that we don't know. And that we heard. I've seen her quoted as saying that he had gout, too. Gout, you know, is a pretty minor condition, but it also can affect the kidneys. So then when we hear reports of kidney failure, we wonder, could the kidneys have been weakened? You know, I did not see that he had diabetes. But diabetes, for example, for our listeners who are wondering about diabetes in the case of the flu, absolutely. People with diabetes have a weaker immune system, and they're not as capable of fighting off severe infections. In a way, this should reassure us because, you know, if he had diabetes, we don't know those things. He certainly looks from photos to have been obese. Again, I'm trying to find a way to tell the public that not a person that dies of something doesn't automatically mean that the virus itself is becoming more severe. There's no indication of that right now.
Also with us on the line from Geneva is another public health professor, Dr. Erwin Redlener. He studies family medicine, family health, population at the Mailman School of Public Health at Columbia University. He's in Geneva for a World Health Organization summit right now, but he's a New Yorker. And Dr. Redlener, do you want to weigh in on this question of underlying conditions and what their relevance is to the flu and what it means that somebody with any of the underlying conditions like heart disease, diabetes, respiratory problems should actually do?
I generally agree that what we're dealing with is a situation that, first of all, this particular flu, like all pandemic flus turn out to be, is extremely unpredictable. There's a lot that we don't know about it. There's a general principle, though, that there are certain people at risk for increased mortality. In other words, who might tend to have a higher fatal response to flu, and typically in the cases that are the regular seasonal flu that we get every year, and talked about 1,000 deaths a year in just New York City. Well, those are generally people who are elderly or very young, or some people who have lots of other kinds of chronic conditions, but mostly the elder and the very young. This particular bug is actually affecting people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s. And much of the deaths that we've seen around the world, not in the States because we haven't had many deaths here, fortunately, but much of the deaths around the world are in the sort of young, healthy adults who are coming down with the illness and getting really sick, some with and some without severe chronic conditions or right. underlying conditions.
Brian, Dr. Siegel, go ahead.
I want to weigh in on that for a second. I agree with what Dr. Redlener is saying. I just want to put forth an idea on that was mentioned in the New England Journal this month and also is a major theory that Jeffrey Taubenberger down at the NIH espouses for the 1918 flu, which is that it may be that people have a partial immunity to some flu strains because of flu strains they've seen before. In other words, this particular flu strain, though it's new, may have cousins or distant relatives that we have some immunity to, which could partly protect us in advance of a vaccine. That could explain why younger people are more susceptible to severe infections, especially in a pandemic situation with a new strain. Now, that's a theory, but it may very well explain that. In this man's case, he wasn't that young, so you have to wonder why he had such a severe infection. It might be, though, that he was one of the people that didn't have much immunity, if any, to this.
And so I want to make sure that we get the new public health advice from the City Health Department out there. One of the new pieces of advice is for anyone with underlying conditions to see a doctor and consider taking antiviral drugs if they believe they have been simply exposed to the flu, even if they are not feeling sick. So does that make sense to both of you, Dr. Redlener? Does that seem like good advice? If you've got one of the relevant underlying conditions that could make the flu much worse in your case, go to a doctor, consider taking antiviral drugs, even if you think you've been exposed without having any symptoms?
Well, that's kind of a hard call, and it depends a lot on the kind of exposure you're talking about. But let's say you're in a school where 25% of the staff and students are out and they have really bad flu situations. It's been documented, and you know that you've been exposed, and you do have, let's say, underlying lung disease or some other underlying chronic disease, then that's a discussion for you and your doctor.
So would that mean, Dr. Siegel, would that mean every kid with asthma in any public school where there's been one case?
Well, asthma is a, I'm glad you picked up asthma, because that's one of the examples of people we would really want to target. And I'm glad you're also bringing up that some of these these two antivirals, Tamiflu and specifically, may be useful to for context of people that have had the flu. But one thing I want to talk about here, Brian, is that with all of the fear that's around, we have to be careful that everybody that has a sniffle doesn't think, I'm the flu, let me have Tamiflu. Because we have to, and New York City Health Department has done a tremendous job at this so far, at trying to figure out just which schools are involved, just what is actually the flu. And the only thing they might do a little bit more in a more enhanced way is get early diagnoses in. Once you have documented a case, or you find an influenza A with an unknown subtype, which is most likely going to be the swine flu because that's the unknown subtype, then you might very well do what you're suggesting here, Brian, which is to give Tamiflu to the close contacts of people that have been exposed to the case, especially if they have underlying conditions like asthma.
Now, we're going to talk about the politics of this in just a minute and bring in City Councilman Eric Gioia, who thinks that the mayor and the health department have not been proactive enough. But Dr. Redlener, I know you have to go in a minute, so I just want to ask you, since you are in Geneva for a WHO summit, the World Health Organization, I've read that the WHO may declare a level 6 pandemic, that's the highest level, as early as today. Can you explain what that term actually means and what the declaration would trigger if it happens?
Yeah, well, first of all, it's 4:50 in the afternoon here in Geneva, and it has not happened yet, and the director general of WHO has not yet proclaimed that. There's an emergency committee of WHO which is evaluating that. If it happens that they go to a level 6, and don't forget, it's phase 6, really, what they're talking about is rapid spread, human-to-human contact, going very easily back and forth among people, and is occurring simultaneously in several different regions around the world, which, you know, we're sort of almost there anyway. But, you know, I just want to remind listeners and you that that particular phasing does not really indicate severity. In other words, it indicates spread and rapidity of spread, but it doesn't necessarily say that it's going to be highly lethal type of pandemic like we had in 1918. It could be widespread and cause a lot of people to be sick, but not have such a high fatality rate. We just don't know yet. And this is a very peculiar virus, and since it's new, we don't know what its behavior is going to be. But to answer your question, so far there has not been a declaration by the Director General of WHO about a level of phase 6.
Dr. Erwin Redlener from the Mailman School of Public Health at Columbia University, joining us from Geneva, where he's attending the World Health Organization Summit. Thank you very much for coming on.
My pleasure.
Still with us is Dr. Mark Siegel from the NYU Langone Medical Center. And also joining us now is City Councilman Eric Gioia, who is also running for public advocate. And he's been complaining about the city not giving us enough information. Councilman Gioia, welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. First, you know, let me just say to the Wiener family, obviously, I think all of us want to offer our deepest condolences, and the whole city should say a prayer for them. I met with the Wiener boys the day before yesterday. It's a really nice family. My heart goes out to them.
Absolutely. Assistant Principal Mitchell Wiener, 55 years old, the first swine flu fatality in New York City. And listeners, by the way, we will have time for a few calls. We do want your input on this. Our website is open at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And our phones are open, and we can do this on both tracks. If you have an opinion about how this is being handled, you can call 212-433-WNYC. Or if you have a medical question or a public health question or are uncertain about how this may or may not affect you, Dr. Siegel is here for that. 212-433-WNYC. 433-9692 or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Councilman Gioia, what are the city officials doing wrong?
Well, First, Brent, I want to be clear. You mentioned politics earlier. This is not a time for politics at all. We're all in the same boat on this, and I think that we are in uncharted territories. What we've got to do is figure out a way to make sure that information is flowing as quickly and as accurately as possible to the public. And I think the mayor is doing a good job at making sure there's not a panic. And from what I've seen, there is no reason to have panic right now, although this is a scary situation. But my phone was ringing off the hook starting on Friday from parents and teachers wondering if their school should be closed down. I heard rumors of a teacher who had the flu and the school not being shut down. One school called me and said there were 92 kids out of the school, and the pregnant teachers were sent home, and the other teachers were worried, and then parents began calling. So what I'm asking the city to do is to very simply make public the criteria for closing a school. What are the metrics that the city is looking at? Let's just put that out there publicly so people can understand the decision-making protocol.
Councilman, let me jump in on that, because it looks to me like the standard has, in fact, changed over the last few days. We now have 11 schools closed. That's a total of about 10,000 kids staying home from school this week. Some of those schools have kids with flu-like symptoms but no confirmed cases. And it does seem to me that the criteria changed and got a little more stringent in terms of, being more proactive with respect to closing schools in the last few days. Is that your observation, too?
That is my observation, but I think that's my question as well. I mean, and I think, listen, this is obviously a very tough situation for everybody in city government to be dealing with, but I think that one of the main concerns is to prevent panic. I think when you don't have information flowing in a way that parents have information, that teachers have information, it could cause exactly what you're trying to prevent. So I think whatever the protocol is, even if it's a shifting protocol, it should be made public. Second, I think we need to have real-time attendance figures for schools. We should know what's happening across the board. And then three, we should know what schools are being tested and what the results are, whether they're positive or negative. And I've been getting a lot of these suggestions from parents. And I think the point here is that as New Yorkers, we want as much information as possible so that we can make decisions, protect our kids, and make decisions. And I'll tell you, my brother-in-law is a corrections officer. My sister's a school teacher. Obviously, there's been at least one case in Rikers Island. And because I represent Queens, all the schools around me are having a high amount of kids not going into school. My wife is pregnant, and she didn't go over my sister's house this weekend because she was concerned. And so, you have a lot of that going around the city.
Yeah.
And I think, one of the best ways to prevent the sort of panic we're trying to avoid is to have a free flow of information. Get it out there
okay. As
quickly as possible.
Well, Dr. Siegel, do you have an opinion about what the criteria should be for closing schools? And do you think as a matter of public health policy, the city has been giving the right kinds of information and making the right kinds of decisions?
Well, Brian, let me weigh in on that, because I've written also a book on fear, and I agree completely with the councilman's point of view on this, that we don't want to create a panic that will actually be counterproductive. Not only that, this is the time of year, for some reason, we're seeing a lot of flu-like symptoms and respiratory infections, strep throat. There are things that can be easily confused. So I have two suggestions that might help in terms of deciding when to close the school. I'm also in agreement with his point about practical, concrete information. I think that we should have kids tested a lot sooner. And then when we have a case that's either documented or possible diagnosis, in other words, let's get a lot of influenza A tests out there. We have the nasal swabs. If we document a case of influenza A with an unknown subtype, we'll know that within 24 hours. Then, bam, you close the school. Not only that, I'd like to see more physicians directly involved, because I think the school nurses have been playing heroic roles here, but, they may not be as familiar with the symptoms of flu versus a common cold versus a different kind of viral infection. I mean, they're really champions at it, but I want to see more boots on the ground in the schools of physicians saying, this is flu, I don't know what it's doing here, let's close the school. So that would be the way to get earlier closing.
Right. In fact, the wife of Mr. Weiner says the city failed to close his school quickly enough. Do you, Councilman Gioia, think that's the case, and is that the reason why the criteria tightened up later in the week?
I don't know why the criteria tightened up later in the week, and that's my question. And I think that's part of the dilemma that we're in right now. I mean, those are the exact questions that parents were asking me all weekend that I don't have an answer to. I don't know why the criteria tightened, and nor do I know actually what the criteria is. And I think I think the city should just make that public. As I said, my heart goes out to the Wiener family. Obviously, they're suffering a terrible loss. And if I were them, I'd be very frustrated, and I'd be asking these questions. And they deserve answers to know if that school should have been closed sooner, now, and if that would have had an impact on their husband's health.
There is going to be an update by city officials beginning in about 5 minutes. We will bring you some excerpts of that a little later in the hour. Here's a question, Dr. Siegel, from our website. Somebody posted this question. My son had strep throat, and he has been taking antibiotics for 10 days. Is that considered an underlying condition? And do the antibiotics protect him from the flu?
Well, A, the antibiotics do not protect you from the flu. B, that is a totally different condition, not an underlying condition. It's not related. He has a different infection. That's one of the points I'm making about how the fear can think everything you have is the flu. But let me add that when you get the flu, one of the things you can get as a secondary infection is a sinus, ear, or throat infection. So this child does not sound like he had the flu at all, but you have to be on the lookout for bacterial infections once you have the flu.
And here's a follow-up from the same person, Dr. Siegel. This is really interesting. This says there have been at least 20 cases of influenza A, if not more, in our school in Plainview, and the school has remained open. I only know this because of my kids' Facebook accounts. So what about pregnant teachers? Are they at high risk? There's a lot of questions in there. But first, influenza A. If swine flu is no more deadly than other kinds of flu, and yet all kinds of flu present risks, serious risks to people with underlying conditions, why shouldn't they close a school if there are 20 cases of influenza A?
That's a really important question. The answer is, first of all, it's not going to happen that much because it's not really influenza A season right now, so it's more influenza B season, and it's unlikely we're going to see big outbreaks of non-swine flu influenza A. I'd be suspicious about whether that was swine flu. But the answer to your question is, whereas many, many people are vaccinated against the yearly flu, I mean, close to 100 million were vaccinated in the United States this year, which presents what we call a herd immunity, which will slow the spread. We do not have that for swine flu. So it's a virgin population. It's an unvaccinated population. And public health officials are trying to slow the spread so they can keep the numbers down so that, you know, again, that this becomes a situation where we see less rather than more cases until we have a vaccine, which we will likely have by the fall.
Right. That's an interesting distinction. And talk about things going viral, Facebook accounts being used to spread information, maybe better than public health officials in the era of social networking. That's an interesting observation from this parent.
And I will say, Brian, on Friday, I actually, when I started getting these calls, I went onto my Facebook account and I asked her parents to send me information. And I've been getting some of the best information from that social networking tool. Many of the things I've talked about today have come from that. And that's when I really realized that we were not doing a good enough job as a city getting pertinent information out to parents.
And certainly on her final question about pregnant teachers, anyone who's pregnant should treat themselves as at high risk and be especially protective, Dr. Siegel, correct?
Well, I completely agree with that. That's because pregnancy itself knocks down the immune system. That's why we always do vaccinate pregnant women against the flu no matter what. And so this is a very special population that has to be protected, both in terms of the mother and the fetus.
All right, we'll continue in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We're talking about the latest swine flu outbreak developments in New York City. We're expecting an update from city officials momentarily, but as of right now, 11 schools are closed. That's the most at any time throughout this. 10,000 kids approximately staying home from school as a result. The first swine flu death having been recorded in the city yesterday. Assistant Principal Mitchell Wiener of Queens, 55 years old. And we're just trying to get to the bottom of what's really going on with Dr. Mark Siegel from the NYU Langone Medical Center and City Councilman Eric Gioia, who has been calling on the city to release more information. He's a councilman from Queens and is running for New York City public advocate for the Democratic nomination this year. Here's a question from Sandra in Manhattan. Sandra, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Is there a way that asthmatics can give themselves extra protection without taking Tamiflu?
Dr. Siegel.
Well, Brian, Sandra, let me tell you, the first point is that every year asthmatics are the first group we want to see get the flu shot. Now, in terms of antivirals, I want to point out before I answer your question that there's two antivirals out there that seem to be effective against this swine flu. One is called Relenza. The other one is called Tamiflu. You're right to be asking me about Tamiflu because the problem with the Relenza is it's inhaled and it can provoke asthma. So we cannot use it in people with breathing problems like that. So your question is, should you be taking Tamiflu? And my answer is that it is not widespread enough. And we're talking about trying to keep it from getting widespread. It is not widespread enough for people out there to be taking an antiviral drug without a real time span, just based on the fact that this has emerged. First of all, it's mild. Secondly, if everybody starts taking Tamiflu, we're probably going to end up with resistance to it, and we won't have it for what we really need it for, which is to treat severe cases and to prevent spread to close contacts or try to prevent spread. So the answer to the question in a long-winded way is no, you shouldn't be taking Tamiflu, but your physician should have availability of Tamiflu if needed.
And calling in now, I believe, is the parent of one of the children with swine flu presently. Jack in Queens, thanks so much for calling, Jack.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
Yes, my daughter was confirmed this morning. They took a nasal swab, and it was confirmed to have the swine flu, and she appears to be the first one in her school in Queens. And the question I had was, first of all, you know, how long is the incubation period for this, and how likely are we, the members of the family, that is me and her mother and her brother, to catch this thing?
Dr. Siegel?
Well, that's a great question. First of all, the incubation period, meaning when she was exposed to it from then to the time when she got sick, is generally believed to be 1 to 2 days. So that's, she was probably exposed to it a couple of days ago. Then she probably will continue to shed the virus for about 5 days or so after she's well. And the thing we need to know about flu is that it can live on surfaces, so it's very important to keep her confined to home, not to go out. This is the best way to prevent the spread of flu, is isolating sick patients. And their close contacts, like you and her mom, should probably be taking antiviral Tamiflu, in my opinion.
Jack, did your doctor recommend that?
No, he didn't tell us anything about that, but this is something that I wanted to check.
I'm saying that without knowing your case. I'm just trying to make a more general point here,
right,
which is preventing spread.
And Jack, is your daughter the first? You said your daughter's the first case at PS175. Is that school still open?
Yeah. I mean, there was no case until now. So I don't know. I spoke to the school nurse there, and she told me that they notified the authorities. So I don't know what they're going to decide there.
And where is that exactly?
It's in Rego Park.
So City Councilman Joya from Queens, what do you think PS-175 should do?
I think the school should be closed. And I think, this is a real example, Brian, of, now we're on the radio. We've just been told there's a case at PS-175. This is the first I'm hearing of it. I'm sure there are parents out there who are worried about that. Sir, can I ask what school your son goes to?
He's going to a middle school. It's Halsey. That's like a block away from that.
So first, let me just say, by the way, I hope that, and I'm sure your daughter will be fine, and I hope that your entire family is fine. But, Brian, you see how this spreads. In other words, if I was a parent either at that school or at that middle school, I would have some real concerns about sending my child to school today or tomorrow. The public shouldn't be getting this information right now on WNYC. We need to have an early warning system and getting this information as rapidly as possible out to parents.
May I ask one other question, please?
Sure.
Go ahead, Jack.
I do not have health insurance, so what are my chances of, not going, bankrupt trying to get Tamiflu or something like that?
Great, great question. City Councilman Joya, what can he do to access free medical help here?
It's a great question. I believe Tamiflu will be available to everybody. If it's not, I will contact the health department as soon as I get off this call to make sure that anybody who comes down with this is being provided by the city. Health insurance should not be a barrier to this, for obvious reasons.
Jack, how's your daughter doing?
She's doing crossword puzzles. She's much better.
Okay, glad to hear it. Glad to hear it's mild.
Hey, can I give you my phone number, sir? My phone number is 718-383-9566. Give my office a call right now, and we will get on trying to get you that and getting you all the help you need.
383-9566?
Right.
I'd like to offer you my phone number, too, sir, 212-532-1214. I'd be happy to give you free medical care.
532-1214?
Right.
Thank you. What's
That's
your name,
Dr.
sir?
Dr. Mark Siegel.
Dr. Mark Siegel at NYU. S-I-E-G-A-L, correct?
E-E-L, right.
E-L. S-I-E-G-E-L.
Okay.
Mark, M-A-R-C. So, Jack, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And, you know, but here's a public health dilemma, in a way, because here we are. We don't know Jack. He certainly sounds completely earnest and sincere. And there's no reason to think that he got the information wrong. And yet, people have not been notified at PS 175. This just happened live and spontaneously on the radio, and we don't want to cause any undue panic or alarm. So take it for what it is. It is one parent who talked about 175 and talked about Halsey as a case of a sibling. Eric Joy, are you suggesting that every school that contains a sibling of somebody with swine flu also be shut down?
Well, I think we need to know what the city's thinking on this. I mean, I certainly think that we should be testing people in that school. We should be testing the school itself. As you know, the flu virus lives on surfaces. And I think whatever that protocol is, we need to make it publicly available. In other words, if the city believes, if the health department believes, you know, if a sibling is at another school and that sibling tests negative, then there's nothing to fear. Okay, well, let's get that out there and let's make sure we're testing that sibling. I was talking to a parent from St. Francis Prep, and they said that when their daughter got sick and their son went off to college in Ohio, even though the son was not sick, the college isolated him for the incubation period in Ohio. And so I think what we're seeing is different public health services having different standards. I think we need to be very clear what those standards are. You know, Brian, I'm not a doctor, obviously.
I want to take one more call, and we're going to have to move on in just a minute, and we're still awaiting this news conference by city officials. We'll go and talk about mayoral control of public schools. We have a three-way debate coming up, and we'll come back to this if they announce anything significant when they do this news conference. But we're so worried about people like Jack's daughter who got a mild case of the flu. She's home for a day doing crossword puzzles. Maybe this is no big deal, at least in her case. And Ian in Edison has another way of looking at this. Ian?
Hi, my question is, and Brian, I love your show.
Thank you.
If history serves us, then this is the beginning possibly of a pandemic, and previous pandemics have been kind of mild, just like this swine flu is. So if you're healthy with no underlying conditions, wouldn't it be better to get the swine flu now when it's nice and mild, build up immunity to it, and then when it resurges itself, you're protected. You don't need a vaccine that could be problematic like the previous ones. So what are your thoughts on that?
Because when they did do a swine flu vaccine in the 1970s, at the first sign of an outbreak, more people got sick and died from the vaccination than from the disease, which turned out to be mild. So, Dr. Siegel, I'll give you the last 30 seconds.
That's right in my wheelhouse. It's what they're calling swine flu parties, and I'm against it for many reasons. First of all, if we start trying to selectively make people immune, we're going to spread more of this thing. Secondly, you can't predict who's going to get really sick, so you can't control it, and it spreads too easily. It's going to get outside of the swine flu party. The third thing is that with the help of vaccinations that we're going to have in the fall and treatment of underlying diseases and the fact that this structurally appears to be a milder virus, much milder than 1918, that we have some partial immunity to it, it makes total sense to be rational and to not try to get our immunity now, but to provide it in a scientific way later on. In terms of your point, Brian, about 1976, which I've written extensively about, I want to point out that that's 1 in 100,000 cases that led to ascending paralysis from the vaccine. And if this continues to spread, it's going to be a cost-benefit analysis, and we're going to say that the vaccine will be a lot better for you than that risk. That was about 1,000 cases out of 40 million people that were vaccinated. By the way, they were vaccinated unnecessarily. It was panic that led that vaccine program. Here, we hope to have a more rational approach, and if it looks like this virus continues to spread, we're going to want to be vaccinated.
Dr. Mark Siegel, infectious disease specialist at the NYU Langone Medical Center. Thanks for spending so much time with us. Thanks for offering your free medical help to Jack from Queens.
Thank you, Brian. That's what I'm here for.
And City Councilman Eric Joya, calling on the city to release more information and more specific guidelines for when schools are being closed. He is a candidate, we note, for a public advocate in New York City this year, speaking out. Eric Gioia, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, mayoral control of those public schools. End it, mend it, or don't mess with success.